Welcome to the Sydney Property Muppets podcast. My name is Kurt Lawther. I'm a real estate agent, and with me and forever is...
Chris Clark, the buyer's agent.
We nailed it, Chris. Yes.
Now you get all excited and then we stumble.
We're doing an exclusive series on a buyer's negotiation journey. Last week we did about the first offer and when you put that offer in and sort of how much. Now we're going to be talking about...
Well, this one's talking about the counter offer. So, talking about when the offer's gone in. We're going to specifically talking about when the counter offer is against other buyers.
Ooh.
So, we're going to break it down into sort of three parts. We're going to talk about basically the black hole. So, how trustworthy, how truthful are agents? Why is it important to have your maximum number already predetermined before you enter negotiations? And also, we're going to talk about the... how big or small, or how the denominations go, how do you, when you then make a decision to come back with a counter offer yourself, how big a stride, or how do you go about that? And yeah. How do we give you some comfort?
The negotiation tactics regarding the dollar figures.
Correct. Okay. Now, let's kick things off.
Yep.
So how can we trust what the agent is saying or not saying? And we're specifically talking about when they're talking about other buyers. So what can they say? What can, you know, you've got an offer from us.
Yep.
You know, we the viewer. Or is it an offer from us? You've got an offer from another buyer, or do you always have another offer from buyer? Do you have to? Can you make someone up?
You can't make someone up, Chris. It's like at auction; you can't have a dummy bidder. Can't make it up.
Okay.
There's no.
Some agents might though.
Some agents might. I think the importance is to build that relationship up with the agent because, and when I talk about building a relationship up with the agent, it doesn't mean you always get along with the agent. It just knows you know where they stand in terms of. You're like, I just know this agent's a bit dodgy, don't really trust him. You've heard multiple other... You might potentially have heard multiple other reliable...
It's a great industry, though.
Reliable other stories. Like any industry. It's just they're playing with a high dollar value, so people get angry. So
can't make up any other buyers.
Can't make up any other buyers.
Okay. So there is another buyer going. Do you have to always tell each buyer... what their numbers are.
No, I never disclose the price. The agent will very rarely ever disclose the price.
Oh, I'm going to correct you there. Agents very often disclose the price.
Sorry. I don't disclose the price of the other.
Just so, I don't know. Like, particularly, maybe it's a buyer's agent thing. Again, I'm in the luxury of that position. But 95% of the agents tell me exactly what the other offer is. Probably because I'm a buyer's agent. And we work on a more transparent basis. Probably a buyer's...
If you were just a normal buyer, then I can almost definitely say I don't believe. There will be some instances out there, but most agents, if they're worth their salt, are not going to give you the exact figure.
But I know when we've done negotiations, when we've done a couple, you have not ever told me the exact number. So you are, even with a buyer's agent, you bastard, you've also not told me exactly what's going on.
Because the game a really good real estate agent, in terms of selling, doesn't want to get into is, particularly with normal buyers, if I say... 1.5 is an offer from someone. I know that most buyers are going to be like 1.500001.
Yeah,
like they're literally thinking that. I can understand.
No, I see. So we're going off $1,000 more.
I can understand from a professional point of view and a relationship. An agent may tell a buyer's agent sort of the number, but Chris, correct me if I'm wrong. There could be a bit of a caveat that be like, Chris, someone's offered 1.5. But we're not selling unless we're at 1.56.
From the vendor scenario, you're talking about the vendor, they're not.
So I've had an offer from Kristen, from Jimmy over here, and Jimmy's offered 1.5.
Oh,
I'm imagining selling agent may come back to you and be like, look, Chris, we have had 1.5. I'm just letting you know our vendor's number.
Well, it's almost, we're another topic coming up as well, talking about counter offer against vendor. So that's almost what you're talking about there, which let's put a pin in that for now and come back to that one. I think the other thing is, so I know another real estate agent who received an offer from a buyer, right? There was no other offers at that point in time and received off the offer was, you know, we talked about the last episode of this series. They offered below guide price. The agent had said to him, there's no other buyers. So they offered just a little bit below the guide price. The following day, another buyer came up and offered about $75,000 more, or did offer $75,000 more in terms of the offer itself. They went back to the original buyer and said, there is now another buyer. They told them the number. I know you say that doesn't, you know, not something you do, but they told the other buyer their number. That buyer, not using a buyer's agent, said, okay, we are not making any increase. We are not changing your offer until you show us their signed contract or an email from them with their names and that offer detail, which is breaking all sorts of legislation. Do not disclose, for one. Secondly, on the reverse of it, would they have wanted their offer with their names on it be taken to another buyer?
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
Probably on that note, probably it riles me up a little bit, and it's probably because I'm really on the ethical side. I work really hard for my vendor, but I try and black and white, keep between the rules, is the buyer entitlement.
Oh, huge.
I think...
Huge.
Now...
I'll quickly finish the story. So they end up selling, another buyer came up. So it ended up selling for about $125,000 more than the buyer. When the agent went back to them and said, it's now sold for that much money, they got the entitlement. They got even more riled up, going, you weren't being transparent. You didn't tell me. Yeah. You wouldn't share the information. I was making uninformed. Agent are going, I've done everything right. I've told you where numbers are, above and beyond. I've literally helped you out. And they said, but you told me there was no buyers. I'm like, yes. When you put the offer in, there was no buyers. Other buyers came up and now it's sold. And then they're crying poor. Yeah.
So to be poignant, you can't lie as an agent. However, a lot of questions we get asked when you come in, why is the owner selling? At the end of the day, I'm sorry, buyers, you have no right to know why they're selling. For example, if the house has many problems, I'm not going to say the owners are fed up with the issues of the house. We would separate, be like, look, the owners are selling for whatever reason, but we would then disclose all the issues that have come up with the house.
Yeah.
So, because at the end of the day, we need to make sure we're getting our vendor the best figure while being ethical.
And it's tricky, right? Because buyers go, well, if it's a divorce situation, if it's a deceased estate, there is motivational characteristic with each of the buyers. The hard part is, it doesn't actually impact the house, the condition of it, where it's based, the location, the qualities of it. And so therefore, if you're using a really good agent, it actually won't impact the process at all. But there's this almost morbid, or almost this curiosity factor people have. And I always bring it back to, is this a house we want? Yes, no, great, yes. Okay, let's do our due diligence. What's the value put on it? Right, let's move forward from there.
Yeah.
But I actually find the entitlement, they want to know the very beginning, even before they walk in the house.
Yeah, and it's a little bit like, you know, how's your marriage? Sort of like, you know, asking what your maximum budget is, like really working out the dollar. Because we know as agents, when you say you're looking at 1.8, that you've probably undercut your maximum.
Yeah.
Because you know.
And we know when you're guiding 1.4, it's probably 1.5.
2.5. So I think
let me talk about the buyer entitlement. And so much so, we just had a discussion offline before starting this. How often have you had buyers, let's say egotistical ones, they've come through, you know, and made an offer, dictated a number, and then they've either gone MIA, or they then come up later on with 1,000 prerequisites and made it a really impossible deal, and the deal falls through. How often does that never happen? Sometimes happen.
I had it happen when I was struggling to sell one bedroom.
Probably in the way here this morning, you had one happen to you.
Yeah, trying to sell a one bedroom unit, and I had it actually happen. It was the worst case because it was a very hard unit to sell. It was tenanted, and we had it happen 3 times to us. But do you know what made it worse? A month, like 3 or 4 weeks later, that buyer, after making the offer, showed back up into the property.
Oh.
Reinvigorating their interest in it, only to go MIA again.
Yeah, well. So I think that's one thing to talk about. I'll be the voice here rather than you talk about it, because I think that's where sometimes we all need to appreciate as buyers that we might be a really good buyer. We might be upstanding, we might be truthful, we might only make it. But unfortunately, there are cowboys out there, and whether they're developers or just people who, you can put in multiple offers, some if you wanted to, and accept one and not take the other two. But there's a way of conducting, unfortunately, not everyone does conduct themselves in that way. And so really, I say, a kind of burnt from all the bad buyers out there that, unfortunately, like buyers look at agents and go, oh, they're all, you know, not amazing. the agents also go, well, all your buyers aren't amazing.
Yeah. Shoes works both feet. We always just see the positive of our own life.
Correct. Yeah. We're all special. All right. So that, I think that's nicely done there. I think the next 2 points, which are good, aren't the heaviest.
Yeah.
Do you want to lead into the next one?
Why is important to have your top number, your maximum number determined before entering negotiations? Now, it doesn't have to be the maximum you can spend, but what you have determined for that property. Because I always say, would you rather climb up a hill and take a short time or a long time? You want to get it over and done with as fast as you can. For me, with the negotiations, if you know your top number, and we'll say the top number you want to pay for this property is 1.5, regardless if the guide's at 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, okay, is that number that your top number is, you're going to have no regrets with how you get to that. So if you end up paying it and you've gone in large jumps, small jumps, you've had no regrets getting to that number because
you've got them. You obviously still probably want to spend less than that. But yeah, it's the point that where you are happy to still progress with the deal up until that point.
Yeah, because you're looking for property. If you're offering $1.5 million on anything, you better be satisfied with what you're like.
No, I think it's, I didn't dovetail onto that. I think it's just very simple thing. I've talked about it before. What, even at auction or whatever scenario it is, just have that clear number in mind for that property. You can, you know, whether there's two elements, is what you can afford and there's a value you put against the property. So you might be able to afford $2 million, but you value that probably at 1.8. That's fine. Whatever those two numbers are, because equally you might value the property at 2.2 and your budget's your top's 2.1. So again, whichever one of those numbers is less, that's pretty much where you're going to walk away from. Play the devil's advocate. Okay, so if someone spent $1,000 more, then you have to walk away. And you'll probably find another $10,000-$20,000 in the back of the couch to be able to do it. But by having it clear in your mindset, it means when we're then having the negotiation, you're putting the offers forward and going back and forth, you still think about things, but you're not thinking about recalculating the stamp duty and the fees and so forth. It's one element removed.
And here's a scenario where I think there would be one occasion that you may actually go a bit above your top number. You've said 1.5, you've got to 1.5. The agents come back and said, look, just letting you know, someone's come back at 1.51, or they've actually given that number, or they've gone a little bit over, and they might ask you, do you have one final crack? You've done your numbers and you know what? You can put an extra $2,000 towards it.
Yeah.
You're happy to do that. If the agent then comes back after that and being like, oh, have you got any more? Because walk away.
Yeah, because they've said that. Once agents start saying, what is your best and final? I always go back, I'm going to put in my best and final, but it is my final.
Yeah.
So do not come back and ask more. I've had one agent in particular ask quite, you know, in one scenario, they kept on coming back, asking for more. And I was like, no, you told me best and final.
Yeah.
I did what you said. Nicely crosses into our last point. So, you know, how big a stride and so forth you go into. Do you offer, you know, 1,000 increments, 5, 10, 50, 100?
Yeah.
We always say with these scenarios, it's hard for us to do because we don't know whether you're spending 13 million or 1 million and we don't know the ins and outs exact scenario.
Which is why we say for this, I feel best is know your top number. Yeah, 100%. So that way when you're offering, whether you want to do large chunks and then get smaller or do small chunks and get larger or however it goes, you're satisfied if you get the property.
Yep.
And if you don't get the property because it's gone over the budget, then you've missed out.
Yeah.
You weren't there.
We had one recently where we identified a property, my client had approved to spend up to 1.9 to spend on the guide prices. 1.6 or 1.65 or something. I can't remember the exact details. And it was us and another buyer, you know, going back and forth in 5, 10, 5, 10 sort of increments. And we finally got up. It was a slow process. It was over 48 hours. We're deliberately slow playing it because we're just trying to eat this out a little bit and see where it can get to. The other buyer got to 1.8. And I said to my buyer, we've got two things to do here. We can either keep going with 5 or 10 Ks, and it's likely they're going to squeeze you all out to 1.9 because we're almost bringing the other buyer with us.
Yep.
By the smaller, and I know it's still a lot of money, but by effectively smaller increments, we're effectively encouraging them to come back. And so there's one or two. We can either do that, and we're likely, I feel like we're going to spend 1.9, or we can put 50K on it now, massive knockout blow, Yep. You'll always be, I said, there'll be two things. You'll always be left going, if we get it for 1.85, you'll feel like you paid 50K over. So I sympathize. But equally, you're also thinking to yourself, if I've gone slower, it's likely in terms of the trend that we're just going to come with us.
Yeah. We always think about the missed out moment. It's very rare you think of the negative. It's like making a decision. We always think of, if we make that decision, all the negatives and positives on that side. But a lot of us don't think of, well, if we don't make that decision, what are the other consequences for not making that decision?
And finish off the story, we secured it at that level and clients extremely happy. As always, once a purchase and sale is done, people are generally quite happy with
vendors,
the scenario.
Vendors, sell whatever, vendors, buyers.
And we saw the value. We saw that, we identified that probably comfortably between 1.9. So it wasn't like for us, we thought we paid over in the end, but that was part of the back and forth.
So Chris, now onto the last part. We usually do three quick cues, but last week Chris came up with this Google game, Google Guess. You type something into Google and then all these suggestions come up and the other person has to guess. This is actually
Starting this week.
Okay, you can.
So I've got a sentence.
Yep.
And then Kurt's going to have three opportunities to finish the sentence. And if he gets out of those three, everyone who gets correct, he gets a point.
I did win last week.
You got two.
You only got one.
So why does my... See.
Armpit smell.
No.
Why does my heart? No. Why does my eyes feel tired?
Yes, I'll give you that. Why does my eye keep twitching?
Okay. Thank you. I'll take that. And why does my dog bark?
Oh no.
Oh come on.
No, because. Why does my dog lick me is a very different statement to why does my dog bark.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, you know what's funny? Why does my heart hurt?
Oh.
And you started, why does my heart, and you changed. So you got 1 point. Okay, your turn on me. Let's see if I can actually win one for once.
So my questions are...
Your sentence.
My statement is, sorry. Cars are the best.
Vehicle? Or transport, like vehicle, transport? No.
No, I can't give you that one.
Invention.
No.
What does it say? Cars are the best to race.
I will give you that one. Cars are the best for drifting.
Drifting, yeah. One. What else was there?
Cars are the best therapy. Cars are the best. What cars are the best on grass? Japanese cars are the best. German cars are the best. Drifting to buy used for snow for new drivers.
Yeah, right. Okay. Nice.
Yep.
One all one this all. Week. We'll call it even. Well done. Thanks for playing along.
Do you know how you say that in Danish?
No.
A draw? An ulagjort.
An ulagjort.
Ulagjort.
Well, on that note... next one, we're talking about what to do when it's before auction.
Yep.
How to put an offer together. It's an auction campaign, but you're submitting offers, or you're going to start negotiating before. I think it's going to be a ripper.
Yeah. So if you know a friend that is in the process of negotiations or about to or starting their search, please pass this podcast on to them, even if it's just this episode or this little series.
I hope you've enjoyed it.
I reckon some useful information.
Thanks for dropping by.